Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Is that a kick?
That was a kick.
Man, you kicked it so hard.
You
man.
Kicked it so hard. And welcome to the Your Favorite Band Podcast, the podcast where we talk to your favorite bands about how your favorite bands became your favorite bands. We're starting a brand new thing today called Your Next Favorite Band, where we'll interview some smaller bands on the off weeks. So if you don't know, Your Favorite Band interviews a band bi-weekly, and we'll put it out. So we have a week in between, and we thought it would be fun to release something in between those weeks from time to time with some interviews with some smaller bands. We made some qualifications to stick to. One is that the band has less than 10,000 Facebook fans, if you will. And so this band today is our very first time doing this on the your next favorite band. And it's, I'm excited. Today, I'm super excited to be talking with a band called Towers. Words can only express my excitement. So please welcome to the show, Towers. How are y'all doing today?
We're doing well, man. Thanks for having us on.
Doing great. Thank
Wonderful.
You.
Wonderful. There's two of you, so it's a little bit easier. I talked to a band earlier today, and there was like three guys, so it was different to tell the voices apart. But luckily, in this case, it's a little bit better. But share your names and what you do in your band.
Yeah, so I'm Kyle, and I play acoustic guitar and write the lyrics and most of the songs.
And I'm Greta, and I sing and play bass.
Great. So, you guys are married and, I'm married too. So anytime I get to hear another married story is always fun. So talk about how you guys met. And was it, did you guys get married simply because you wanted to start a band together, or were there other reasons besides that?
There were other reasons for sure. We actually met through the Avenue of Music though. We were both helping out with a nonprofit that had a musical piece to it that is called Young Life. And we were helping out with them, and I was playing music, and Greta started helping out with the nonprofit, and that's where we met, and we fell in love, man.
Covering cheesy pop songs together.
How long have you guys been married for?
It'll be 5 years in May.
Wow, congratulations.
Very yeah, well. Man, how about you?
I've been married for 3 years now. 3 years.
Nice, dude.
And December. So talk a little bit about how you guys decided let's start this thing called Towers, and how you brought other people along and stuff like that. So just tell kind of the beginning of the band.
Yeah, so Kyle and I started writing music together just naturally because it was a fun thing to do, and we wanted to go play at coffee shops and just express ourselves that way a little more. And then as we were writing songs and getting more excited about them, we invited some of our best friends who we really admired along in that process. when we started recording some of those songs. So we talked to our friend Emma Chrislip, who is an amazing cellist, and she joined us, and our friend Kyle Keller, who can play everything, but he mostly plays electric guitar and synth and trumpet and banjo. He's been across the board for us. And then we've had a few different drummers over the years, but it's been a super fun process of kind of making a little family.
Yeah, it was really natural. I felt like we were, Greta and I have always been songwriters in some sense or another. And after we got married, that was a piece of our life that was just bringing us a lot of life. And so when we released our first record, it was kind of a bit of an experiment that turned into something that we were able to live off of, which was kind of a surprise to both of us, and still is some days. But that's kind of the quick spark note version of how we became a band, and it was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, so talk a little bit about recording that first album. Like, recording albums cost a lot of money, so is that like a, did you guys do anything in-house, or did you go and make the investment to go in studio and stuff like that?
Yeah, we did. So we have a really good friend here in town named Ben Lapar, and he invested in us early on, and has a really terrific, cool studio at his house. And we went to his house, and he cut us a great deal, and that's where we recorded our first two records. We never did demos or anything like that. We wrote a song and we liked it, so we just went and recorded it, which is a really different process than what we just went through on our upcoming album. But so it was kind of a mixture of both. He's a bit DIY in some senses in how he runs his studio. And we were a part of it from front to back. So we were in there when he was mixing and learning about mixing and helping him mix. We were in there choosing the mics with him. And in some ways he became a bit of a co-producer too. So
yeah. That's awesome. And talk about kind of, you guys are obviously married, so you get to write and figure out how you want a song to form. But talk about the maybe the difficulties at time, but also the what it's like to bring other people into your creation and say, hey, add on to it. What do you see? What do you want to add to it? So talk about how you work with the other parts of your band with the stuff that you already write at home.
Yeah, so Our writing process has been primarily I'll write the lyrics and the songs, and then Greta will come in and do harmonies and write bass parts. And so it's, you know, over the years we've done different things. I think when we first started out, there was a lot more emphasis on trying to like collaborate on every single part, and then we soon found that was a pretty difficult and time-consuming thing to do. And so over the years, I think we've all just learned kind of our roles within the songwriting process. And so now usually what happens is, you know, we'll bring a song to the table. Greta and I will kind of have hashed out a lot of the structures and details that we want within it. And then the band brings what they do best, which is their instrumentation, and try to evoke the same emotion through their instrument that we're trying to get through the lyrics and the melody and the story of the song. And so right now that's been our process, a little less magical than I wish I could say, but there has been moments though where we'll collaborate on one song, and everyone is having a piece and say in the lyrics, and it's not across the board always the same. Like on this next record, we have a song called Going, that we all sat in a room for a really long time and helped to write lyrics and, helped to write melody and try to, portray the emotion we wanted to within it. But I would say primarily how we do it is we bring the song to the table and then we each do our part on it. So
yeah, for sure. And, as you guys as a married couple, we've talked to other artists who have written stuff with their spouse, and they talk about how it's so much fun, but it's also really difficult because there's that extra part there, and trying not to hurt the other person's feelings when you say that idea sucks, or however you work through that. So talk about that, the marriage priest, maybe Greta, talk about what it's like as a wife to write songs with your husband and throw out what you think creatively and not get your feelings hurt and not take it personally and stuff like that.
Yeah, the writing process is such a vulnerable process, and it really does take a big kind of opening of yourself to someone. And you would think that naturally that would be so easy to do with the person you're closest to in life, but it is hard sometimes when you are trying to share your ideas and how much more hurtful that can be from your spouse sometimes if they don't like them or all of that. So I think we've learned a lot over the last few years about how to communicate and when to take things personally and when not to take things personally. And I think we've just been able to give each other a lot of grace in that and have fun with it and laugh at each other and know when we need to just stop and like wrestle for a second or something. but I've been really thankful for Kyle because he's such a poet and such an artist with his lyrics and emotions going into a song. And I think sometimes I'm a little bit more analytical and I just want to think about, okay, but that's really cool the way you said that, but how do we make it so people actually understand what you're saying? Or how do we make this a little make this a little clearer here or something? So I think when we really can bring both of our strengths to the table, that that can lend itself really well.
Yeah, it's been, if I could add anything to that too, I feel like songwriting has been this arena for us to get to know each other. Because as much as you would think, like, in being married just in that environment, you would really get to know somebody, that's constantly changing, you know? I'm sure you know, as a married guy, like, the person that you married 3 years ago has changed so much today. And in the songwriting process, I think that those changes and the process of those changes is being highlighted in a way that is sometimes... it can be really hurtful to the other person. And so I think we've experienced a lot of growth just in our relationship by writing music together, because I mean, even on this last record, we have a song called All Right. And it was all about just some mental things that I was dealing with at the beginning of the year and kind of wondering, like, would our relationship be okay if I wasn't okay? Honestly, the first time me telling Greta that was when we started writing the song. And so I'm like, I showed Greta this chorus, you know, if I'm not all right, will we be all right? And it kind of opens up this door to like, wait a second, like, are you okay? And so it's been a cool communication tool for us to kind of say maybe what we can't otherwise say in conversation. It's been a real gift, but yes, it is really hard. But I would say also that most things in life that are worthwhile are usually hard.
Yeah, for sure. So, it's interesting to me as a band, you're independent, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
So I, first time I heard you was, Belly of the Deepest Love, and it was thanks to some random Spotify playlist. So I'm interested in, and how you guys feel like streaming music has helped you guys kind of get out of the local bubble and allow your songs to be picked up by random playlists that random people listen to in Greenville, South Carolina, or wherever people may be, to kind of get you guys out there that maybe wasn't available a few years ago.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you kept using the word random, and I think that is kind of how I can best describe it. We've been really thankful for Spotify. You know, there's a lot of conversations these days in the music world about streaming music and what's fair. And ultimately, like, as an independent artist, I have such a little voice within those conversations. I kind of have to just, I need to use what's there and see the good in it. And for us, Spotify has been a marketing tool, more than it has been a revenue tool. And so, yeah, I think that really early on, for some reason, I couldn't tell you why, Spotify became this kind of mega marketing tool for us by specifically the Discover Weeklies were the things that we saw our music showing up on a lot. And it was both a really cool thing and also, you know, for me personally, the way that Spotify works and streaming works, where the most played song is being put up top, and that kind of becomes the songs that propel themselves and self-perpetuate themselves as the number one songs, because when people are checking out your music, they're just going in and clicking on the top one or one, two, or three. And so, you know, for me, that's been this kind of double-edged sword where I'm really grateful that, you know, we're getting this marketing, but also some of the songs that have been the ones that become the most popular, are not necessarily the ones that I resonate with still the most deeply. But at the same point, I think there's a serving aspect to music that we want to acknowledge, that we create art and then we invite people to the table to interpret and partake of the meal, that is the song. And sometimes people will just enjoy songs more than I enjoy them. So yeah, that's kind of a long-winded way of just saying, I don't really know how, it got to be a thing that was a really valuable marketing tool for us, but it is something we're really grateful for. And I think is valuable, for independent musicians.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You guys have said that you're able to now, live off of music. Belly of the Divas has 1.5 million streams, which is a lot, but it probably isn't enough to live on. So have you seen those streams turn into sales that have allowed you to do that? Or is it strictly like, man, Spotify actually isn't as bad as people say it is as far as kicking out that revenue?
Yeah, I think it's all relative, right? Based off of like what you think is good revenue. But, you know, for us, we live a pretty simple life, and it's enough revenue that we could live off of that. But as far as that turning into sales, I think the most we see the conversion happening in is Spotify has a really great sort of in-app addition. I think it's through Bands in Town, where I don't know how it does it, but it basically will tell people if there's shows in their area coming up. And that has been super valuable to us, and people being able to come out to shows. So in that sense, I'm not sure about actual like people going to iTunes and purchasing the CD after they listen to it on Spotify. I'm not really sure how to track that data, but when we talk to people at shows, a lot of times they're like, hey, 2 weeks ago you were on my Discover Weekly, and then I saw y'all were coming through, and so I decided to buy a ticket. And that oftentimes is the most, just the largest conversion piece from Spotify that we see.
Yeah,
at least to my understanding.
Yeah.
So
that's really interesting.
It is, yeah.
Talk about the when did you guys get to a point with the first album to where you were seeing the streams and decided, all right, we're going to start touring a little bit and going outside of our local bubble and playing shows that people were able to show up to because they saw it on Spotify. So when did you guys say, let's go, let's travel the world, if you will, if you will.
We have a backwards story with that. Greta will talk.
I mean, I think we've always been excited about just getting to travel more and play shows and meet wonderful people. But, a couple years ago, we got connected with our manager. His name is Paul Barger, and he is a great guy who lives up in Portland. And he really, once we connected with him, was able to help us just have more connections across the country and go for those things that we were a little bit confused on how to pursue initially. So he's been really a wonderful help and support system with that and with touring. And also, it was kind of a crazy timing in our life because it was right around the time that we found out we were pregnant with our son, Solace. And that was also the time that we got connected with Paul and that our second album was being released. And all of these things were kind of happening at once. So, you know, we found out that I was pregnant and then we quit our office jobs. And normally people would think that you would want to do the opposite when you find out you're having a baby. But we're like, okay, if we're gonna do this, we're going to go for it and see what happens and allow more time for this. And we know that having a family will work and it can be flexible and this little dude can come along and be part of the journey. And so it was really a leap of faith and something that did take a lot of just trust and willingness to fail, and it's been a fun adventure.
Beats of hammers felt like drums of war. Killed for the words you swore. From
So going from record one to record two, The Great Minimum, talk about how you guys were trying to grow musically or lyrically and what you were hoping to say in album two that you weren't able to say in album one. You talked a little bit about how the songs that might be the biggest or maybe the ones that you don't resonate the most with anymore. Were things changing in your thought process or understanding of the world that was causing you to write differently than maybe in album one?
Yeah. Yeah. It feels so long ago now. It was like 2 years ago.
It's not that long.
Yeah. You know, I think there's kind of a involuntary growth that happens when you're just trying to participate in your craft and your art every day. And I think that The Great Minimum was more so just kind of a natural transition for us musically and lyrically, just in us participating every day in writing and trying to come up with songs, than it was like an intentional, we're going to try to do it this way this time, if that makes sense. And so I think from that, obviously it was really different because I would like to think that we were growing and we were experimenting a lot with new sounds and bigger sounds. And for instance, we didn't even have a drum set on our first album. So we added a drum set and electric guitar became more prominent. And a lot of that had to do with just kind of the way we were writing on that record was we would get together for, you know, big full days and just kind of allow the energy of the song to take it wherever it wanted to go. And I think that in that, the songs came out a little bit more energetic than the first record. So the transition from one to two, I think, was just a natural flow of the circumstances in which we were writing. I think on this new record coming up, I know you didn't ask about it, but I feel like that this one, I feel like I tried to be a little bit more poignant in what I wanted to say. And was a little bit more intentional than just like participating in the craft, but also trying to make it a part of and start a conversation. Where the other ones, I think there were definitely moments I was trying to start conversations, but they kind of happened just naturally out of my own experiences. Where this one, I'm like trying to, I guess, more intentionally dive into those things. Does that make sense?
Yep, for sure. And Greta, as somebody who's kind of adding not just help lyrically, but also musically with the bass and stuff. Talk about how that bigger sound that you hear on the second record, was it an easy transition for you as a bass player to add to that bigger sound, like versus maybe the little bit of a smaller sound in album one? Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. That's a great question. I've always loved singing, and that's been a part of my life since I was a kid. But I've just dabbled in all these different instruments. I've played piano, I've played guitar, I messed with banjo. And when we were getting this bigger sound, we were pretty much just like, okay, I need to learn how to play the bass now. So honestly, it's a newer adventure for me. But I love it. And after playing it for the last 2 years, it's such a fun instrument. And I know that it's such a deep well that I can still perfect and work on as well. But so it's been fun just finding my niche in that way with which instrument I can really work on and perfect. And I love the bass. I love getting to rock out on that.
Yeah, she didn't. So yeah, the transition from one to two was she learned the bass.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly. Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, that's awesome. Yeah.
I mean, so, she had a good background in guitar and banjo, though, that made the transition pretty easy for her.
Yeah, cool. The bass, for whatever reason, is like a daunting instrument to me. Like, I can play guitar and all this stuff, like, it's, you know, but when you take the four strings and it's all low end, and like, I get it theoretically, but it's just really difficult for me to do it. So well,
I think it's because
you.
It's so, there's like, it's so simple in some ways, but in, it is the backbone of the song. Like the drummer's going to the bass player.
Yes.
If the bass is out of tune, everything's out of tune. If there's like a nice drive to the bass, the whole song has a drive. It's like this ghost that is kind of always operating in the background that no one really realizes is the essence of the music, you know? So it's a big deal, and it represents Greta well, because she basically is that in our band. So.
Yeah. So before we get to the new stuff, one thing that's interesting about you guys is you're a smaller band, but you're still a little bit further along than a band that might just be starting. And you're in a streaming world. You're in a world where you got to still do everything yourself still. So talk a little bit about like what advice you would give to a band that's just starting out that is still having to do everything themselves. Like, what are some failures that you've run into where you're like, I had no idea that this, I would have to deal with this. And what are some successes where you're like, we took a risk here and it was really worth it.
You know, I think on kind of just a 30,000 foot level, the biggest piece of advice I can offer people is do the work. You know, put your ass in the chair every day and write, and book shows. And I think that when you do that, people notice. And if it bothers you that you're not getting someplace successfully, I think that was a pitfall for me, was trying to, sort of assign why I was doing it before we ever got anywhere with it. So for me, it was about, okay, something in me comes alive when I write music. So that's why I'm going to do it. And the rest of the band, I'm sure, could say the same. And so we did the work and we continue to do the work. But the backbone to that isn't so that we will get some success or some recognition. It's because it makes us come alive. So I think identifying the why in your craft or in your art is the most important thing, and then just doing the work to do that. And then outside of that, there's a lot of things that we've failed in, a lot of money that we've spent that I didn't know if it was worth it, a lot of things that we've done that I think were worth it. And I think out of those things that are a little bit more tangible, one piece of advice I would offer that I was really uncomfortable with at first was giving away our music. Because as an artist, I think there's this sense of like, you want people to like value your art enough to pay for it. Right. But I think there is kind of a cool exchange of trust between you and a listener. When you do it strategically, that, you can get a lot of fans and a lot of relationships with people that you otherwise couldn't get if you are just kind of putting a wall between your listener and you that is a payment, you know what I mean? I would think finding ways to give away your music strategically, has been really valuable to us. Like Spotify is honestly one of those things. And also Noise Trade for us was such a cool experience to have with our fan base. One that I didn't expect would be so cool and has really helped us out with tours, and has gotten people to get our albums for free, by exchanging information on, their zip codes and email addresses. And yeah. I think that is a piece of music that we're going to continue to do because we've seen not only the benefit of it relationally with our fans, but also the benefit of it with the information that you can get, if you do it right and in a way that's not just, without any forethought in it. So yeah, those three things, but yeah. What do you think, Greta? You should.
Yeah, I love what you said. And I think Kyle's been overseeing more of that business aspect, but we've talked about this before too, and I think it's really valuable, just the aspect of community and people. And you know, he kept referencing just relationship, and man, I think that was everything when we were starting. Was not even that our music was great or anything, but just that our friends were great and our community was so supportive and loving. So if there was any piece of advice I could share, I would say go be a good friend, go be a part of a community. Like, yeah. You know, we were like playing at youth camps over the summer and we were meeting people and having dinners at our house, and just go be in your community and be a good friend. And that speaks a lot more than your music sometimes.
Yeah. Both Greta and I were advertising majors in college, and I think we both walked away from our degrees kind of being like a little disgusted with kind of the industry of advertising. And I think, yeah, what Greta said is so perfect. Like, if you want good advertising, just be a good friend.
Not because you want good advertising, yeah,
not because of that. Yeah, obviously. But I think there's just a piece to relationships that, that forms a deeper partnership with people than just a consumer. You know, like I am not interested in all about making monetary transactions with people so they can listen to my music. What we want is we want people to like invest in the conversations and relationships and community that we're trying to develop out of our music, and have some sort of solidarity and pain and the human condition that we're trying to write about.
Yeah. It's such an interesting time for music, like with like even Chance, like you look at Chance the Rapper and a guy who said, I'm not going to sell CDs. Everything's going to be streaming. It's just going to be out there. And he made the entire industry change. Like he made the Grammys change their rules.
Like it's so true, man. Yeah.
Just because he was like, you know what? Like there's a relationship there that is a little bit different. Like there's a special kind of relationship between somebody who says, I love your art so much, I'm going to buy it. But there's also something beautiful about just somebody stumbling upon something that they're able to stream for free and falling in love that way. Like it's an interesting time to be alive.
It is, man. Yeah. Yeah.
And going to crowdfunding, which you guys did for your third album. Did you do it for number two or is it just for the third one?
Yeah. So we just did crowdfunding for our third one. I always think crowdfunding is funny because technically we crowdfund for everything because by people buying our music, we keep doing it.
Right. So yeah.
Crowdfunding is kind of always happening, but yeah, on a more like
campaign.
Yeah, level. Yeah, on a more campaign level, we did an Indiegogo for this third record.
So talk a little bit about the crowdfunding aspect and if you felt like it was successful. I know you guys didn't quite make your goal. So was it a quote unquote failure in that regard, or was it still like, man, that was worth it? That was worth throwing something out there and seeing what people would be willing to give.
Yeah, I think what you just said is really kind of the philosophy we had. We had never done a crowdfund before, and we're still learning a lot about, you know, the people who are interested in what we do. And so we kind of set the highest goal that we could based off of the things that we needed to pay for. And by no means do I think it was a failure, because I think for us it was so encouraging to see people who we don't even know investing in what we do to allow us to keep doing it. So in that way, it was extremely encouraging. While it would have been really nice to have raised $40,000, we raised enough to cover the costs of the rest of our recording and producer fee. And that was incredible. So yeah, it was a really valuable experience to us. I think we learned a lot about kind of where we are at with the people who are interested in our music, and we were really encouraged by it. And I definitely would do it again. And there's definitely things that I would change about it, but in some ways there's just nothing you can really do. You can put out as much as you can. For me, it was a bit of a hard thing to do, just asking people for money. Cause we've always kind of had this in-house kind of philosophy behind everything we do. You know, we're going to pay for it. We're going to do this, kind of on our own. And I think what's cool about crowdfunding and, any sort of just participation from your fans on helping you do what you do is you realize, wow, there's no way that we can do anything in life alone. And it's such a facade if I think that. So yeah, we're really excited about the outcome of the Indiegogo, and it was really helpful to us in paying off a lot of stuff we needed to do. And I would highly recommend it to anyone who's wanting to do record stuff, just because I think it's a good lesson in life that you can't do anything alone. So
yeah, you guys crowdfunded because you're independent. Are you independent right now by choice? Have you had some record labels reach out? And if not, I'm not going to paint you in a corner and be like, will you ever be signed or not? Like draw a line of sand. But do you feel like independent is what you guys want to do long term, or is the end goal to be signed and allow that to be a little bit more stable without all the question marks?
Yeah. Stable is a funny word too, I think, within the music world. Because I would argue that there's probably aspects of record labels that are less stable. But no, we're not opposed to being on a record label. We have been approached by a couple, but they just weren't necessarily good fits for the philosophy of our music. And I think as far as the way that we run our business now, I'm not really sure what a record label could do for us outside of distribution and the marketing tools that we couldn't do ourselves. My manager Paul, he's not only just like a good buddy, but he's a genius, I think, when it comes to marketing and how to do that in a relational way. And so no, we're not opposed to it at all. I think if the right deal came around and it was good for my family and it was good for the members of my band, that I would, you know, highly consider it. But nothing has come to the doorstep yet that has been, I don't know, I guess enough for us to say yes to. Mm-hmm. And we enjoy being independent. There's so much freedom, and I can sing about whatever I want to sing about. And well, until Greta tells me that I need to say it in a different way.
Right.
And then, but yeah, I think there's just, and you know, you even talked about it with Chance, and there's a lot of artists who are just, they're breaking the rules. They might be on record labels or whatnot, but there's kind of, the rules are changing a lot with the internet and streaming and access to different forms of advertising. And so I think if we're creative and we put in the work and we budget well, I think we can do those things that a record label can do.
Yeah, cool. Well, let's get to the new one, which we're going to play something off of in a minute, which I'm really excited about. But in a few weeks, March 10th, yeah, you got your new album, Great Fidelity, coming out. So talk about that, what you guys are hoping to put out into the world with this new one.
Man, it's been such a sweet process making this third album, and we loved working with David Wilton in Colorado, and I think the whole band, we were just ready to, okay, we've been doing this locally, we've been doing this here in Flagstaff, like, how can we bring our best to this album and do that lyrically and instrumentally and everything? And it's so fun watching the whole package come together and really feeling proud of it in that way. And I personally feel the most excited about this album out of any of our albums. And I think the lyrics are amazing, and Kyle did such a beautiful job with that. And the songs really communicate story so well in such different ways. And it's cool watching each of our strengths come out in different ways on this album. I think, you know, the cello or the synth or the drums or even us getting to share the load of vocal leading in different ways. There's just a lot of different strengths getting pulled out in this album that I hope people resonate with.
Cool. From a songwriting standpoint, I know we're going to play one in a minute that you said you feel like kind of sums up what you were trying to say with the album. So what were you trying to say with this album?
Yeah, so we called this record Great Fidelity, and I'm really curious about the conversations we can have with people about what that means to them. But this last year, I think more than any year of my life has been really transitional. It's been transitional in the way that I look at spirituality. It's been transitional as a parent. It's been transitional relationally. We've been moving a lot. there was just a lot of in-between spaces. And I think that the hope that I held on to during that time was kind of around this idea of fidelity and devotion, being above having answers or conclusions. Or things I could hold on to, you know? So this record is, I hope that it invites people into a conversation of hope and not a conversation of absolutes, where we have to have the answers in order to keep going with hope. I don't think that's necessary. It's this song that you're about to play, we call it Liminal, which just means transitional place. And it was about where we found hope was kind of in these really unexpected areas that weren't really concrete.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, we're excited to play it. Before we do and end this bad boy, how about you tell people how they can follow along with you, get the album on March 10th and all that good stuff?
Yeah, you can follow us on all major social medias. You spell Towers TOW apostrophe RS, but in our
just
social
because.
Media because you can't well, there's some reasons behind it, but there in our social media you can't put an apostrophe, so it'll just be TOWRS music. That's where you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, we're on Facebook, and then our website is towersmusic.com, TOWRS music.com. You can sign up for our newsletter and get updates that way. Otherwise, we are pretty good at posting what's going on in our lives and show-wise on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook.
Perfect. Well, how about, you know how sometimes people like kick it to a song and stuff like that? Like, how about you, can you kick it to your own song? And that'd be fun. Why not?
Yeah, I don't know how to kick.
What you just say, kick? like we're Towers and this is our song called Liminal or something.
Have you ever seen the Bill O'Reilly clip where he freaks out because he doesn't know, like they're saying, we're going to kick it to this song to end the show. And he doesn't understand what that phrase means. And he just goes nuts. It's amazing. It's amazing. And I kind of want you to freak out like that. You haven't seen that?
Oh, I haven't seen it, man. I'm so bad at the internet. I feel like I spend a good amount of time like researching stuff on how to do it musically, but as far as like posting on my personal media and like looking up stuff, I'm not very good. So,
you could
send me a link and enlighten me on pop culture, and I would be so much cooler.
I will absolutely do that. It's worth every penny that you'll spend on it, which you won't spend any money, but if you did, it'd be worth it still. Anyways, feel free to kick it.
We're Towers, and this is our song, Liminal.
On New Year's Eve, the space between my head and heart, the distance often seems just too far. But I can't stay like this. I can't stay like this. I can't stay like this. Don't. Listening, but she spoke. It's in her affection I'm sinking. It's while I was sleeping that I woke. Now the months and years have passed, the shadows have offered us change kind. Just hold this red light. When the dance is because of the fire's light. But I can't stay like this. I can't stay like this. I can't stay like this. Don't leave me like this. I was in listening, but she spoke. It's in her affection I'm seeing. It's while I was sleeping that I woke. She spoke. It's in her affection. sinking. It's why